in my experience, I've seen kind of really two different categories of folks at work. And this is in health plans, almost in every organization, but there's people who are about the work and about trying to move things forward, which is why I love this particular podcast, because I think that's really what it's about. And there's people who are about their jobs for a whole variety of reasons. And the focus is entirely different.
Welcome to Broken Benefits. I'm your host, Lee Lewis, and this is a podcast where we learn from top employer experts on how to fix our broken benefits to save lives, save dollars, and save your talent. Welcome back, everyone, to Broken Benefits. I'm your host, Lee Lewis, and today's guest, Barb Flitch, is really a renaissance person who's worked so much within the roles of managing health plans. She helped lead a Fortune 500 health plan for multiple years, where she was able to flatten trend for around half a decade. Additionally, she's been a consultant and even now has been outsourced talent to help support benefits teams working in these roles and trying to make transformative change within healthcare. We're so excited to learn from her today. Welcome to Broken Benefits, Barb. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Lee. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So first question, tell us a little bit about the experiences in your background that helped to shape what you know about healthcare today and how employers can have an impact on American healthcare.
Sure. So I started 35 years ago, long time, and was fortunate enough to be cast in a role as a service rep back in the days, kind of actually before we had computers on our desks, if you remember that, and receptionists. And so I learned from the ground up, and I think I learned a lot about how the sausage gets made, which then I just continued to carry forward into all of the different roles that I had. And I think it taught me a deep appreciation for paying attention to the detail while also understanding what is the goal. Right? How do you connect those two dots that sometimes seem very far apart? So I was a service rep with Aetna for many years, and then went from there into a variety of roles in different health plans. I was part of Definity Health from kind of zero to sale. So part of a big successful startup, been part of lots of not so successful startups. And along the way made relationships that have carried forward. And in fact, that's what ended up putting me in position to be helping manage that health plan and working to keep the financials in check. So really understanding the motivations of the folks that are in charge was a big part of what I learned along the way.
Oh, that's interesting. So there's a few different threads there. One of them is sort of managing internally. And this comes up a lot, that large employers have a hard time deploying change, but you've been pretty successful at it. Maybe you could share a little bit about how you help organizations to be more agile, even though they have so many constituent shareholders, processes, et cetera.
With the energy company, there were leaders that were very focused on numbers, but not so focused on experience. And so we needed to connect those dots together. And then going from the top down to the bottom to understand what was happening on the ground level. Why were people not following through? Why were people, they would set stuff up and then just kind of leave it to the dust, right? And into the mist. And so what we do is, and what I've done is really focus on what are the motivations and what needs to get done, just focusing on what needs to get done and how do you get it done inside the culture, right? It's great to walk in with a set of best practices that say, oh, we're going to do it this way. But if that doesn't work in the culture, you're not going to get anywhere. So we pay close attention to that as well and understanding what's happening in the organization so that you don't sound tone deaf when you start bringing ideas.
Oh, that's interesting. So connecting new ideas to the culture that's already there makes a lot of sense. What do you think are some of the things that health plans are missing that they should totally be doing, but many of them are missing the mark?
That's a great question. I think internal organization, I'm going to back up and say, in my experience, I've seen kind of really two different categories of folks at work. and this is in health plans, almost in every organization, but there's people who are about the work and about trying to move things forward, which is why I love this particular podcast, because I think that's really what it's about. And there's people who are about their jobs for a whole variety of reasons, and the focus is entirely different. So, you know, again, I think it depends on where they sit in the organization, right? When you talk about what a big action is. And I like to try and understand, you know, are these people about the work or are they about their job, right? Because that changes the motivation and how you kind of get them to do what should they be doing. The first thing is that they should be listening to their customers. And that's one of the things that's so shocking, but that's where that separation shows up. Because when people are about the job, they often don't listen to the customers, because that's not what's guiding them. What's guiding them, and I have had roles where I stepped in and the first thing I was told is that I would spend 40% of my time managing my career and 60% as an executive managing the work. And that stunned me. So I think that's the first thing is pay attention to the work. Pay attention to the customer.
Oh, that I can't help but think that would be exhausting to be spending 40% of time managing your career. I would be terrible at that. Like, that's the last thing I think about.
I was terrible at it. Yeah, it wasn't. And I just, that was never going to be me.
Oh my goodness. I appreciate that a ton. So there's that old saying that you either change people or you change people, right? And in your experience, is it possible to light a fire and inspire people who are just focused on their job to latch on to sort of a broader mission or trying to help, you know, make innovative changes? Or is it one of those where maybe we just need to, maybe you don't let those people go, but you supplement them with other people who might have a different perspective in order to get things done?
Yeah, I think that's a process, right? I think that, and I think I have had the good fortune to work with people who come to the table ready to say, we can inspire this person. We can inspire them to be different. And I've seen it happen, right? People who are, I'm going to say, kind of corporately dead inside, you know, just, they're just tired. They're worn out. They're worn out from bringing their best stuff and nothing ever happens. And sometimes there's a moment when all of the stars align and you can make a difference for those people. And I've had people say that working alongside of them has changed their perspective. And sometimes they go on to something different because they've discovered that that's their choice. Mm-hmm. And sometimes they need to move on in a different way. And then you have to have leaders that have intestinal fortitude to do what needs to happen to make the right thing happen.
I love that. One of the biggest threats to American healthcare, from my perspective, is that it's very hard for large employers to implement innovative changes. And I, you know, you've had a career where you've been successful at that. You mentioned connecting it to culture, but are there operational tricks or hacks or methods that people can use to make it easier to get things through?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think the first thing is start small, you know, and don't be afraid to try. This is the other theme that as I look across all of the organizations that I've worked with that have done things successfully, and let's define success, right? As we learn something, right? What are we going in with to try and understand how do we define success? The one for all and all for one rarely works. Like that's a really unique organization that can roll stuff out for everybody all at once and have it win. So where is the right place to start? And the answer can be different depending on the thing you're trying to do, but figuring that out first. And again, going to the motivation of we're human beings, right? We want to succeed. So how do we create success for the person who is going to be on point for this, whether it's someone senior or someone more junior, is often the place to start. And once you can define that, you can back into, there's all kinds of templates and process and things that you just know work when you understand what the outcome is, and deploying those rationally is really important too. But defining success at the outset and figuring out where you can go in and start small is the thing that I've seen work. And not being afraid to fail, right? We're going to learn something.
Right. I love that concept. Almost like you should have a goal. Like, hey, what do we want to learn this year? So this totally keys into something I'm working on with a few of my most innovative employers. They're looking at lots of new things in the marketplace, such as, you know, narrower networks or advanced primary care that anchors, you know, where the whole plan design anchors around that, or an all copay plan design or an all cash based plan design. And all of it just seems really out there. And so we end up not doing any of it. But I wonder if we reframed the goal of, hey, we want to learn about one new innovative thing this year. RFPs don't predict the future. You got to test it. Let's test it with 100 people and have it be a course. We're going to take a course on this innovative concept. We do that by making a great incentive for 100 people who have a very high risk tolerance to give it a try. And then we come out on the other side. Anyway, you're just giving me a ton to think about there that I really love.
Yeah, I love that.
As we think about kind of, there's the old adage, what gets measured gets managed. And I think employers today swim in like an ocean of irrelevant information. We're sort of, you know, we're dying of thirst while swimming in the ocean of sorts with insights. What are some of the key KPIs that you need to track in order to guide a health plan to great outcomes?
Yeah, that's a great point. And it's interesting that you say we're swimming in insights, because I think we're swimming in data as opposed to insights. Right? There's so many metrics, and how do you think about what are the right metrics? And I use a framework, I've used it forever, that lays data alongside time, right? So some of this is about setting expectations internally. And again, when you're thinking about starting small, you're not going to get 100%, right? Can we move the needle 5%? And what's the potential impact of that? So thinking rationally about what your goals are, and then understanding it in terms of what we think of as process, which is the how many's, right? And this is where a lot of places get stuck, because they start there and that's as far as they go. We had engagement, right? We had 37% sign up or whatever that is. So that's the how many's. The next layer, and you can get that pretty quick, right? You can get that within 30, 60, 90 days of doing something. The next layer is attitude. What did people think of it? This is a little more challenging, because in a lot of organizations, they don't want to do more surveys. Asking the question the right way really matters. Sitting and putting a question out to an employee population saying, well, what kind of benefits do you want? You know, you're likely to get everything that's not possible. And then the message back is, we didn't pay attention, right? So how you ask that question really matters. And then the next level is impact, which is what's happening to rates and, you know, so PEPMs. Think of average length of stay, right? Inpatient stays per thousand, like the rate stuff that you can start to understand a little bit more after maybe 9 to 12 months. And then what's the long-term play here? Are we really looking for trend reduction? Are we really looking for how does this impact our potential attraction to employees? Like there's all kinds of different layers, but you have to have a strong sense of priority about what matters. What are you trying to accomplish? And then work backwards from that.
Okay. Oh, there's a lot to unpack here. So first one is, you've mentioned, you know, we want to know what our people think about our benefits. How do we do that? How do we ask that question? Is it surveys? A lot of employers aren't allowed, the benefits team's not allowed to survey on things.
Right.
So how do we pull that information out to get that feedback? Because you're right. If I don't know if people even like my benefits, how am I supposed to decide what to offer next if I have no idea what people think about anything that I'm already doing?
Yeah. Data. Well, here's where data is really important, right? You can't make these decisions without data. Otherwise, you're just guessing. And maybe in some organizations, that's okay. But for most part, it's not. So if you don't have the data, first thing is to understand whether you have the data. And if you don't have the data, how do you get it? So This is where being around for a million years is helpful, because I can remember days when we were doing this on paper, right? And now you can partner. We've been very successful partnering with solutions and plans to use the technology that's available to us. The quick hit kind of thing in the moment is what you really want to go to. So that's why I say, I would tell you that I think asking people, what do you think of our benefits, is a terrible idea. you're not going to get useful information out of that, right? If you're saying, do you have a need that's not being met? What is it? That's a very different question, right? Do you have, and again, if you're particularly concerned about your attraction for a certain demographic and what the data is telling you, external data is telling you, they care about these three things. You can work with your partners. We very successfully worked with a health plan, with a couple of point solutions, having them interject just a simple kind of happy, sad, neutral face at the end of an experience to say, what'd you think? Right. And that started to give us the data to use that we could think about attitude. The other thing is, where do they go? What do they do? And so just literally pulling in the drift of digital data that shows up with interactions, the systems that we have now are capable of doing a lot, but we have to think early on when we're setting it up about, are we gathering the data that we need to do the analysis at the end? So those are two things that I think about. First of all, look at your internal systems. The systems that are the HRIS stuff that's out there today can do a lot of things. Unfortunately, what happens is it's siloed over in IT. IT runs the setup of it. They don't necessarily talk to HR operations or the benefits team about it. And it gets built without the ability to gather that data. So that internal collaboration is super critical to getting the output that you need to understand where to go next.
Interesting. So you've just mentioned here, okay, if I'm a benefits manager, I'm not allowed to survey my people. I'm not allowed to send mailers. Like, there's restrictions around what I'm able to do as a global kind of, you know, blast. Like, say I have 100,000 employees. What I'm hearing here is that it might be possible to add little feedback questions on the end of interactions that go through the, enrollment systems or HRIS. There might be ways to work with my carrier to include questions after interactions with patients or after a patient or one of our health members has used a service. Am I thinking about this right? These are absolutely tools or tactics that can be used.
Yeah, and I think the core kind of universal tactic that is very successful or has been successful for me is, you know, I live in the world of the great success of Definity Health was that we found some brilliant people found the path forward that says, well, it doesn't say we can't, right? So the first question is, what can you do? And it's amazing how often they come back with a, well, we could do this. It's like, we just don't do it today because nobody's ever asked.
Wow. I think that's really profound. One of my favorite consultants has a woman named Lisa Bodell. She's a futurist and talks about how to solve problems at companies. One of the things she says is the concept of kill a stupid rule that effectively, she asks her clients, what are stupid rules or stupid things that you're doing? Write them down that you probably shouldn't be. And then she flips it and says, which of these things are actually a rule versus just something that you do? Yeah. And when they unpack it like that, like half the things that we just assume we all have to do actually aren't even a rule at all. And then it's the concept of try to get rid of that stuff. I love the inverse of what you're saying is, what are things we want to do but think we can't? And then is there really a rule against it? And if there isn't, then let's move forward.
I think the other thing is that it's about how you show up as a partner. So either internally with other groups in your company or with your external vendors, carriers, what have you, they love that stuff, right? This is becoming part of their R&D engine to keep pushing them to do better. And so earlier you asked me, what are people in health plans doing that they shouldn't be doing, or what aren't they doing that they should be doing? This is one of those customer listening things that is super, I mean, it's easy to ask that question. What can we do? And people love to talk about the stuff that's possible. So that's then attaching to that. Remember the concept of it's about the work, not the job.
Right.
Because then that connects people to the work because they get to be part of potentially what happens to that.
And so this is within the frame, both to downstream employees, but also within the benefit, you know, say the benefits team.
Absolutely. Of
what are things that we want to do that we can't, or that we think we can't, you know, if we could explore. And that helps to sort of light a fire under people who might, what was the term you said? Sort of a corporate, they've sort of corporate dead, right? Because they've brought their whole self, and it's they've never been able to sort of unleash
it. It wasn't accepted, right? It was, yeah. Nobody took them up on the opportunity.
Oh, I love this. How much time do you think teams need to spend mining and looking at data? And are there a few key questions that are more important than others?
Oh, that's a big question. So from a time perspective, I think it depends on the maturity of the organization. And by that, I mean both the technological and kind of infrastructure support that they have, as well as how they function as a team, right? Okay. If you don't trust somebody who's telling you something, right, because they're pulling an insight from data,
right,
it's going to take longer because you're going to make them prove it, right? If you've proven to me that you're bringing all the things, I'm just going to take what you're giving me and run with it, right? So that's a time reducer, and you have to build that trust. You know, the five dysfunctions of a team, right? The first basis is trust.
Right.
Yep. So once you get past that, you can move much faster. So from a time standpoint, and I think it depends on, by the way, who has a voice and who has a vote in the organization about what you do. Right. Do you have to bring a bunch of people? You know, there are some organizations that pride themselves on collaboration, whether it's real or not.
Right.
And so there are steps culturally that you have to take to bring people along, but being prepared for that is a big part of how fast you can move. Right. And again, it comes back to, we're human beings. What's going to make that person feel good about taking point or taking ownership or even putting a halo on something that you're doing, from a benefits leader, total rewards leader, CHRO, CEO, CFO, whoever those people are, like, what's their motivation? How will you get them comfortable? And then focus on that and make sure that you're checking those boxes along the way and keep them informed. Right. Don't like run away and hide until the end.
A lot of times when people are trying to do something new and innovative, especially if it's controlling cost, it puts them in misalignment with some of the larger vendors they work with, like an insurance carrier or a PBM. And it becomes, you know, the better you get, it's almost like the more you face resistance.
Mm-hmm.
How have you found a way to get past that in your career?
This is going to sound like a broken record, but honestly, it goes to motivation, right? So when you go to renew a health plan and you're in a really dire financial situation, right? What are the levers that you can pull with your partner? And again, it depends on where the partnership sits, right? If the partnership is in bad shape, it's going to be really tough to make that happen. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you have to go up the food chain, which is uncomfortable. And sometimes you have to say no, right? Mm-hmm. Nope. And no is a complete sentence, by the way.
With a period at the end.
With a period at the end. The other one that I love is, that doesn't work for me.
I love that. Just
silence, because, you know, we abhor silence. We abhor the void, and somebody will speak up.
What do you think are the biggest opportunities within healthcare that employers ought to be seizing on?
So I do see this. And so first of all, the really getting your hands around the data, the stuff is coming at so fast. It's coming at us. AI is coming at us fast. The amount of data that's going to produce and understanding what insights you can draw from that is coming fast. So getting your arms around that, I think, is really important. I think coming at this from the experience is also really important. The people that I see being really successful with this, and you've talked to a bunch of them, you know, they're all out there, right? And this was kind of where we had success at the energy company, was how do we think, what is the experience we want people to have, right? Within a cost contained structure. So again, I'm back to the, what can we do and how do we make it, how do we optimize that experience? If you deliver that, generally speaking, you're going to get the results that you want. And then working backwards to, okay, so what can we do? How do we drive these? How do we make this real? And then the other thing that I will say over and over and over again is you have to communicate. You have to do it appropriately, but there has to be a level of transparency around this that says, here's what we're doing and here's why, so that people do understand. They might not like it, but at least you're getting buy-in, right? This is not consensus. This is about buy-in. And those are two really different things. So I think communicate, focus on the experience, and start with data, which are themes that I've heard over and over on this podcast.
That's right.
So, and then follow up with the data, right? You have to close the loop so that you know where to go next, which is this is probably the biggest thing that I see teams fall down on. They do stuff, they get it in, they launch it well, they do it right, and then they just leave it alone. They never come back to it because they're on to the next thing.
Oh, God, that's like normal Homo sapien activity. What is... In coming back to something, what do we need to do when we come back to something post-launch?
Well, you got to have a plan, first of all, right? Your plan should always include the, when are we coming back? What are we looking at? That's that assessment framework, right? And then also bring in, where are we today as an organization? Are we still in the same place around this thing, or are we someplace completely different? I've been part of, you know, when I was in that role, we had senior leadership change that, you know, we went from an environment where we could not use the word stress. We could not say mental health, right? It was all very kind of uncomfortable to say those things to a leadership team that now the CEO ends his messages with links to the EAP, right? Messages,
oh, wow.
Take care of yourself. That's, I mean, cool. Yeah. So very cool different concept. Place 5 years on than they were when they started the process. And so what that's done is opened the door for them to bring forward a lot of the great thinking and a lot of the great strategy and all of the great things that were developed with great intention to do all the right things and save money. But it's in an environment where now it's accepted.
Wow. If I have an employer who says, hey, Barb, I would love to have a good communication strategy, but two most common things. One is, nobody cares about kind of healthcare benefits, other types of benefits, unless they're sick right in that moment. And so nobody cares.
Yep.
And then they'll also say, oh, but I don't have money and I don't know, you know, I don't know I don't have a big budget or staff or whatever in order to get it done. Could you maybe walk through how you'd address both of those?
Sure. I'm not a communications expert, right? I'm not a trained communicator. So I always acknowledge that because I've learned that there's a big difference. The first thing is I've seen great success, and you're right. People don't care about these things until they need them, right? That's just human nature. I've got a job. I don't need that to be my job, but when I need it, I need it. So the first thing is think about, when are those moments happening and how do you capitalize on those moments? How do you put that information in front of people and make it easy for them to find? Finding stuff is the hardest thing. So that's one thing. And that doesn't really cost you anything, by the way. You usually do have people that are managing the internal portal. You can work with your carrier on their messaging and how are they speaking and when are they speaking. That's a bigger lift, honestly, because customer service has just changed in that dynamic over the years. Right. And the other thing is pay attention to how you talk about things, right? It doesn't cost you anything to change how you talk about things. Make the language more welcoming, make it more empathic in terms of understanding that stuff. And frankly, you know, ChatGPT, guys, there's great stuff happening with that. If there's a good tool, let's use it. Let's use it to good effect, right? Now you have to monitor and you have to train people to do that. But if you're positioning your organization for the future, that really should be part of your plan because it's coming, and to deny it is going to be to your detriment. And then I think it's having this plan to say, where are all the opportunities? And then how are we reminding people? Because most companies offer a ton of free stuff that no one knows about because it's buried in.
Right.
Right. It's all over the place. So like one of the things that we did that was very successful in an annual enrollment campaign that actually the employer ended up winning an award of excellence for, was we did a free stuff page with the annual enrollment that reminded people, you got all of these things. And by the way, here's how you find it. So it wasn't necessarily that they were facing some big health crisis or somebody in their family had a big need. This was all of the other things that they do and they run and they manage that never see the light of day, to remind mm-hmm. people there's a whole lot more out here for you than just these three things we're asking you to choose.
I love that so much. I love it so much. How can we align the incentives of benefits teams with the organization? And the assumption behind that is I hear feedback a lot that, as an employer, I realize I can have an impact on, you know, I can help have a positive impact on the world trying to, you know, rein in my cost and get better savings, manage my plan and be innovative. But I don't have any incentive to do that. Because doing something new is a little bit disruptive, that could cost me my job. If I save money, I don't get any credit. They expect my cost to go up 5% a year. I just need to keep it below, you know, the average, and I'm fine. But if I save $100 million, I had one benefits leader tell me, one of my favorite quotes ever was, Lee, if I save $60 million, all I get is a high five. That's as much as I can expect.
And $60 million less in your budget next year.
And $60 million less. That's right. And so there's this misalignment between the organizations and the staff. And you've been in lots of organizations and you've helped with sort of this alignment. That's one of your themes. How can we get that to be better at organizations?
Yeah. And again, the folks that you've had on are all so accomplished, right, at this, and so wise about how they manage the organizational piece of this. Mm-hmm. Again, I'm going to go back to how you set the stage, right? Being transparent with the people who are in this line that are going to make these decisions about, you're telling me I've got to save X amount of money. Okay, that's great. Like, there might not be a well to go back to. So putting the choice to say, okay, well, which would you rather? You know, I can do this or I can do this. Here's the outcome of those two. Help me choose. Right. So having a real conversation with somebody about that is one thing. And again, I go back to intestinal fortitude, right? You got to have the right people sitting in this place and able to communicate. So working on those communication skills, you know, this is the other thing that we often forget, right? Is that as people, we continue to develop, and even leaders need to continue to develop. And so some people are fantastic communicators and it's very easy for them to convey the vision and the spirit and the reality. And other people need some help to do that, right? So where do you have on your team somebody that can really cut through, you know, testing these things with other people before you go to your leaders with them to see all the stuff that they resonate? Leaders should not think that they have to be bulletproof, right? Be willing to take some shots before you go have the conversation. And then also sit down and say, right, like, hey, you know what? If I save, so one of the things that we've done very successfully is work with our partners to say, will you fund this, right? We want to try that program, but I don't have the money to do it. Will you fund it?
Who's the partner in this context?
Carriers, for the most part.
Okay.
But also, you know, when it comes to the communication stuff, a lot of times there are marketing dollars available from point solutions. There's budget that they've allocated to these things that they don't honestly know what they're doing with. And so if you can help them to better effect, they're very happy to do that with you, right? So some of this is about finding money. And then the other thing is about saying, okay, well, if I save $60 million, what are you going to let me do next year? Because I'm going to need some of that back, right?
That's a great point. And that kind of
set the expectation. Sorry. It doesn't always work, but again, I'm back to, you got to try. Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And having that clear communication, and if you know, I think part of it is if you know this kind of opportunity is available and that it might be hard to reach, you can go back to your leadership and say, hey, I think this is there. I think there's a good shot at it. It will be a ton of work. I will need X resources. Do you want me to go and get it? Is this something that we can get behind? But having I think you have to have that confidence in yourself before you can go and have the conversation internally, because the last thing you want to do is sign up for something that you're ultimately not able to deliver.
Oh yeah, there's no worse feeling in the world than being like, oh my God, I just bit off.
Totally the worst. Yes, it is. What, you know, as in throughout your career, what are some of the, you know, one or more of the biggest risks that you took that ultimately paid off?
Oh, yeah. I mean, again, jumping in with both feet into Definity when it was not even a thing, right? When it was an idea that turned out to be a $300 million exit kind of a situation. But that along the way was every step along the way felt fraught with risk, right? We were doing things like putting messages on EOBs that had never been done before. We were using PowerPoints in annual enrollment meetings that had never been done before, with video clips that could fail, right? Technology that could fail and make us look bad. You know, honestly, taking on this role, leading a $150 million health plan.
And Definity, a little more information on Definity.
Definity Health was like them or hate them. We created the category of CDHPs in the U.S. So the founders kind of brought that concept over. You know, we were in copay land, in the land of John Q. Remember that, like back in the HMO days when everyone was like, we were the public enemy number one in health plans, you know? And the idea held up, right? That people didn't understand the cost of healthcare. So if we did nothing else, I do think that we changed the industry in terms of people do get now that an office visit isn't $5.
Right.
You never used to read about this stuff in the common press, right? It wasn't a topic for the average Jane to be reading about the cost of this stuff or the machinations of health systems or any of this stuff. And now it's kind of all out there because we need to understand it as consumers. The fallacy was, hey, it's like buying car insurance. It's not like buying car insurance. Health insurance is not like anything else, right? It's intensely personal. It's often, you know, in a crisis when people are at their emotional worst. It's financially potentially destabilizing for families and companies. You know, I hear a lot of this today with companies looking at some of the medication stuff that's happening, and mid-sized companies can go bankrupt over this stuff if they're not structured well. And so, you know, that the idea that you could teach people about the economics of healthcare and give them a way to do it comfortably was great. As it panned out, the concepts were good, but the reality, you know, I did this early in my career at Watson Wyatt, and we had a health system that was like, we're all in. They were very innovative. Their leadership team was fantastic. They had a PPO and they had an HMO. And of course it's home cooking because it's a health system, right? So we've got this most favorite nation stuff going on that we had to worry about. And out of the gate, we got 85% enrollment in a choice environment.
Wow.
Insane, right? And those were the days when if you got 5%, we were giving each other high fives.
Totally. You
know? But 5 years down the road, after they had eliminated their PPO plan, it didn't change the slope of cost, right? It dropped it dramatically because people did eliminate a lot of the.
That's right. They were consuming less, but the trend is the same.
Correct. Right. And because, and again, right, this was the battle that we couldn't win. We couldn't win the network discount game. And so eventually it all reverted again to that. And I see that we're back there again. But what I see is more rational choices around what are we trading for a potential discount savings versus all the infrastructure that we've built, all of the plus deals that we've done around point solutions and continuum of care and integration and all of the other value that's driven outside of discounts. And if depending on the financial situation of the company, you might not be able to get away from that, right? If you can save 15 basis points on your plan,
right,
by switching carriers, there's a cost to doing it. And you just have to understand that up front, that sometimes you can't win that game. You're going to chase the discounts. I want to see us get away from that because discounts were originally a proxy for quality. We have better tools to use now for quality.
Right.
Discounts are about price and that's it. And I think it's a race to the bottom.
Yeah. it's a really good point. It goes along with what you said earlier too about, you know, looking at the impact and the how many's and attaching time to the money as well, right? How much work is it to save 1% in discounts? Could we take that same amount of work and save 2% through cancer, second opinion, yes, or something, yes, else, right? There, the money's there, the savings are there. And the question is how much, you know, how much effort do we have to get there?
And it's a game of inches, right? Because for the it most is. Part, companies have done a lot of things. So now right. it's very condition specific. It's looking at new money, like this, the whole GLP-1 conversation, right? I will out that I have very strong opinions about this for personal reasons, but yeah. I think there's a way to do it, but this is new money. And in 35 years, I've never seen new money really, you know, other than maybe the Hep C vaccines that were sure. or the treatments that were coming through.
Yeah.
And it's a huge number. But that's the other thing too, is think beyond benefits, right? What other program do you have that you could be thinking about, talking about, programming for, constructing finances for, that mm-hmm. could potentially reach 40% of your population? Mm-hmm. It disproportionately affects, if you have DEI goals, it disproportionately affects people of color and women, right? Obesity. It is a financial burden for people. And so if you say that you care about financial well-being, right? What are you doing? What are you doing in the benefits realm to connect to these other things? And bringing that as an investment package to your leadership as an across the organization win, as opposed to just a cost center issue.
Great point. If we're thinking about how to create a better member experience, this is something where you're an expert. Imagine you're coming, you just were placed in a new role, leading a large health plan. What are the quick things you would do to gauge whether or not you have a good member experience? And what are the first two or three things you would do to improve it?
So my first stop would be in whatever realm they operate, to go to our, you know, whoever handles the calls to the call center, right?
Okay.
And inside the organization, right? Whether it's a ticket-based system or it's a phone-based system, however they use that. And actually understanding that is one of the first things, right? Because how are people reaching out to us? Do they think that works, right? What are the natural flows okay. for people to get information is a first place to start. And then understanding, what are they yeah. saying? Right? What are the things that we're hearing? Usually themes emerge and you can say, oh, well, we've got a problem with this because we're getting 100 calls a month on this. Mm-hmm. And that might be a really easy fix of moving something on the benefit portal, asking the carrier to change how they talk about something. And then I would also do the same thing with the different provider partners that we have to get their intake of what are people saying? What noise are you hearing? That's your first cut. To potentially find really low-hanging fruit, right?
This is great.
Pay attention to the low-hanging fruit. Like, again, start small. You don't have to go out with a big campaign about something. Fix some of the irritants, right? The stuff that's sand in people's underwear. It's like just, the grit of life. If you can make that better, that starts to have a neighbor effect. And people are like, oh, I didn't find that hard at all. You should do this. We realigned all of the mental health benefits at the energy company to make it a single point of entry system that then you were navigated to the best place for you to get help the fastest and the cheapest. We didn't change a single benefit.
I love that. You probably didn't need a big new budget. You didn't have to change the benefits. You probably didn't need a new vendor. You just reoriented around the patient after listening to the members.
Yep. And actually that's a great example, because we did, in fact, in the process of what we ended up doing, we saved $1 million by eliminating an incentive program that very few people were using and nobody was really benefiting from. Took that money and instead of giving it back to the budget, reinvested it in new solutions that could augment what we were doing in the space, in the continuum of care.
Wow.
I love that. So those are the first things that I would do is honestly, I would hone in on that stuff and then go into the organization and be like, okay, well, tell me frankly, what sucks. Like what are your frustrations?
And using the resource we already have, we may not be able to do like a formal survey out to the whole population, but we're talking to our people every day when they call in with different things. What are the trends? What are the most common questions? What are the themes? This is great information.
I wouldn't put the question like, what do you hate out there to the broad populace? It's the operational side of things that says what's difficult. And by the way, go in transparently saying, not sure we can fix any of this, but we want to try and understand where we should be focusing our resources to make your life better so that you can make other people's lives better, right? Like that's back to the old customer service thing of putting a mirror up there. And when you smile, people hear it.
Right.
Right. How do you make the experience better for the people that have to deal with this stuff on a daily basis is a great place to start too, because the audience is smaller.
Yeah. What projects are you working on right now that you're loving? Like what's the most exciting stuff that you're working on right now?
God, we have so much fun. We get to have so much fun. So we're focused on helping companies get stuff done. Really, like that's our thing. They all have strategies. They've spent a lot of time and money developing them. We want to help them operationalize that. We're actually working with a large organization who is bringing communication teams together.
Okay.
Global, US, and well-being. And so helping them think about what's the operating plan to, again, make their lives easier and better and make sure that their employees know how to access, understand, and appreciate the benefits that they have, right? Like that's the big overarching picture. I love that. I love the team. It's awesome. We're working with another organization who has really never had a vendor management system cycle. Hmm. And so it's not high tech. It's not a technology play. It's a literal nuts and bolts. How do you manage a cycle of a relationship, right? So all of the assets and the artifacts and the processes that go along with that, I'm loving that. We're beginning to engage now with a bunch of different portfolio companies of a couple investment firms that we're trying to teach them to come to the table better, right? How do you come better prepared? How do you anticipate what your employer clients are going to ask from you and be ready to say yes, or also be transparent and training skills up on how do you have a conversation about, we can put that in the roadmap, or if you're willing to do this, we can do that, right? So teaching
kind these of- These are vendors like point solutions?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep.
Fascinating. So
we work in kind of all sectors of the market. And that's our secret sauce, is that because we deeply understand the inside of all of these places, we're connected to the motivations in a way that's different than you typically find in the market.
Oh, that's wild. What a great insight. This has been absolutely wonderful and really so enriching. If anyone listening today wanted to connect with you and get to know more about any of these concepts or to learn more about what you're doing now, what would be the best way to connect with you?
Yeah. Find me on LinkedIn and message me. I'm out there often and it's under Barbara Flitch, or you can go to our AMP page and find me there too on LinkedIn. It's AMP LLC. There's a lot of AMP companies out there, but we're AMP LLC.
Okay. And that is like amplc.com.
There is no website.
Oh, got it. No website. Got it.
Yeah, no website.
Right there on LinkedIn is perfect.
Yeah.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for coming and sharing today. Just terrific advice that I know that our audience is going to be able to use. Really appreciate it. And for any of you who were listening today, thank you so much for tuning into the podcast here on Broken Benefits. If this was helpful to you, please feel free to connect it with others. Share it, through a link, through YouTube or whatever else is easiest. And we'll talk to you next time. Thanks. Thanks for joining us on Broken Benefits. If you enjoyed today's episode, please subscribe to our YouTube channel or on your favorite podcasting platform. Also, please share today's show with a friend or colleague. It's free to do, and it helps us spread the message to as many people as possible. Until next time.